Happy to see you all. First of all, for those listening across the world and those in front of me, just so it'll be easier for future generations to check whether I'm right or wrong, today is September 17th, 2017. Today is not a regular class. I've already given 6 shiurim this year, and I want to take off some time to answer all the questions that have come my way and to let off a little steam. Now, a press conference, the name was given by Rabbara Lichtenstein, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, and Rabbara at a press conference, what it meant was he answered questions on contemporary events, contemporary hashkafa, call it what you wish. I've modified it in a press conference. When I have a press conference, I hope it'll be only once a year. The burning issues should quiet down. But I take no questions. I know what's on my mind and your mind, and I want to deal with it. I have much more to accomplish than I really can in an hour and 30 minutes, 40 minutes. That's number one. So also to the people listening across the world, I have to tell you in advance, some of you will think I'm too right-wing, some of you will think I'm too left-wing, and you're entitled to your points of view, but please do not send me emails trying to debate with me or discuss with me. I never discuss hashkaf. Everyone is free to choose. I'm a Talmud of Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. Halacha demands, commands obedience, and in halacha we always try to reach a final answer. Some of you heard my shiurim about 20 years ago in this very room. I devoted 2-3 years to the Kuntrius HaPsak of the Shach from Yoredeya Reish Memalef. How do we paskin? How do we reach a conclusion? But Hashkafa, we can argue from today to tomorrow. And I cite to you Mori Rebbe, the unbelievable talk he gave at the Mizrahi Convention in the late 50s, early 60s. It may have actually been given the night that I got married. Because from my wedding, he was driven to the wedding of the Sadeh Kedushin, and from the wedding, he was driven to Long Beach to the Mizrahi Convention. And he spoke, it could be that's the night he spoke about Joseph Vyechov. And Mori Rebbe taught us when it comes to Hashkafa, you can argue from today to tomorrow, but you have to look up and see what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. So whether I'm right and wrong, or all the topics I'm touch upon, we'll reconvene in 49 years from now, Be'ezrat Hashem, and we'll sit down 49 years from now and see, was Rakefet right? Did he hit a home run? Did he hit a triple? Did he strike out? Baruch Hashem, that's the way my Rebbe raised me. My dear students, there's a terrible problem today. When the Rav first heard about this in the 70s, you can hear him on tape, he's shouting, yelling, practically crying. He can't believe that human beings will stoop to this level. And yet here we are in the year 2018, where people who claim they're Orthodox speak about partnership unions, having a ceremony to sanctify two men or two women coming together. It hurts me even to say these words. And those of you who live in the state of Israel know that right now the religious parties are shaking over an issue with Shasnik, who goes to the wedding of his nephew, wedding, God have mercy, to another man. Okay, let me begin at the beginning. The Gemara in Chulin, and every last person should cite this Gemara and make it available to every last Jew. Chulin Daf Sadi Bet Amid Aleph, it continues on Sadi Bet Amid Bet. Ulama Elu Shlosh Mitzvah, the mitzvah that the B'nai Noach received but and promised to observe. Very little of the original 30 they subscribed to. Now there are only 3 left. And one thing the Gemara says to the credit, there are 3 things they do that the Gemara gives them credit. I'm only going to talk about the first thing. And the Gemara says, She'ein kotvin k'tuva l'zacharim. That they don't write a k'tuva. They have male relationships, lo aleinu, homosexuality, but they don't sanctify it. They don't write a ketubah. Look into Rashi, you'll see the pshat, you'll see that I'm correct. This Gemara is so powerful, and I can cite many other Gemaras, Midrashim. If we indulge in this type of behavior, we are bringing an end to the civilized world. God promised never to destroy the whole world at once, but part of the world can disappear right under our eyes, and I don't want to elaborate. We've just seen the Gevura of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when he decides to give us a little taste of what can happen. We saw it in Erko, we saw it elsewhere. Shem Yirachem. Now, what's happened here is beginning in the 70s, when this whole sexual revolution began, actually in the 60s, but in the 70s, the liberals, the leftists, many Jews who are totally barren of any concept of what Yiddishkeit is about, started telling us left and right that this is inborn, you can't change it, it's the way God created the world, we can't be angry. So let me tell you, yes, inborn. All research shows, and you can check this out on, go to Harafagon Google and type in homosexuality, lesbianism, nature or nurture. It's under 2% of the animal kingdom and under 2% of the human kingdom. And yes, Ein Hachinami. There are a very small percentage, and people born that way. Many of us are born with difficulties. I've told you more than once, I was exposed to people that had terrible tempers. I saw with my own eyes people rip the tablecloth off the table, and all the dishes fall on the floor, crack, break. Mori Rebbe, it's no secret that you see it in The Lonely Man of Faith and in all the memoir literature that has come out. He came from Brisk, and he inherited the Beit Halevi's traits for whom he was named. He could 50s, 60s kids said something stupid in class. Wow, he could shoot him down very quickly, very thoroughly, and very completely. And the Rav, you can pick him up on tape years later in Moria, where he was more relaxed. It was not a shear in class. In other words, in class, what he was trying to do was to frighten us that we should want to shape up and become Gedolei Yisrael. I don't know whether it's the right teaching method, but that was the Rav's method, at least the 40s, 50s, 60s, and the 70s, lo aleinu, unfortunately, he mellowed, and we're not happy about that, because the reasons he mellowed are the vicissitudes of life. But when he was in his prime, he wanted the students to shape up. But in Moria, Tuesday night, it was balabatim. It was a different type of shir, a different type of crowd. So the Rav would ad-lib, and suddenly it was in the Agadah part, he suddenly ad-libbed, and it was something about working on yourself, developing good traits, and the Rav says, yes, I know, ich ken ganz gut, he says, I know very well that I have a temper, but I'm working on it, I'm trying to control it. But he says to the crowd, but I'm not there yet, and everyone is laughing, you understand? So you can be born with traits, but okay, you have to overcome them. This is the challenge. If some people are born so self-centered. Look, you know I've given many shiurim, I consider these shiurim my best shiurim ever on the Muslim movement. I grew up in the Muslim movement. There are people sitting in this room who sat with me before Rav Lesson. We grew up, we worked on character traits. Some people are so self-centered that there's no room for the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the Gemara already alludes to it, a Baal Gaiva, no one else can be in the room with him. And you have to overcome these traits. But now I want to deal with homosexuality, lesbianism, and I want to show you halacha l'maisa, and I can spend 2 hours now, I'm only going to spend a few minutes. Halacha l'maisa, what this is generally all about. I've been teaching Torah for 59 years. Don't you think I've had cases of homosexuality, lesbianism? Almost all the cases I have dealt with have been a result, nothing to do with inborn, nothing to do with nature. It has to do with psychological problems, social problems. I've studied the literature, an overbearing mother no male models in the family, social deficiencies for a boy to talk to a girl. And now let me give you a case before your eyes, a case that investigative reporting was 5 pages in Yediot Ahronot, a case that appeared in the New York Times, investigative reporting. What's that bell? Is that what you hear?
I hear tapping constantly.
You hear the tapping. God, I can't. But where's it tapping from? I'm not doing anything. I'm sitting here. I'm not banging. I mean, it's not the rub of giving a clop. Okay, let's see. This appeared in the New York Times. Very important. The lady went public with her name. I'm not going to mention any names, not because of any halachic reason. I apologize. I should mention names because it makes it more real. You can check out. But these people have relatives, and one relative who's a very dear student of mine has difficulty getting a shidduch because he bears one of the names. So I don't want to mention the name, that's all. But the New York Times. But the New York Times did its investigative reporting, but it didn't come to Aaron Rakefet. Had they come to me, they would have had more material. And the story is very simple. A fabulous couple, a man who was one of the greatest medical doctors in the greater New York City area, a fabulous Jew. He came from a typical American Jewish home. His father had a liquor store on the Upper East Side. His father used to boast that he sold Rabbi Belkin, the second president of Yeshiva, was his customer. And he used to boast that his biggest achievement was that Rav Shmuel Belkin was his customer for liquor. Okay. So he had a son who went on to become a world-class oncologist, number one mentioned in every survey of doctors, number one. I once spent the Shabbos in the house, the phone never stopped ringing. They on the chemotherapy, they kept on calling him how much to give of each, and he would answer. He was a genius. In that field, he was the expert. So at a certain point, they became totally from, I don't like to use Balei Tshuva, these big kids, someone who never had, I can be a Balei Tshuva, but someone who never had an HA, they discovered, you know, you got to be a Jew. So they switched the kids to Ramaz. So one girl, their youngest had 6 children, a fabulous couple, 6 children. So the youngest girl needed help catching up. So the father turned to Rabbi Riskin and asked Rabbi Riskin, at that time Rabbi Riskin was having students, he had a rabbinical school, I mean, he had big plans in America. He had a high, why he was shaking, you know what went on in the 70s. The problem is no one is writing history. Some dummy named Rothkopf finished the book on Rebel. No one has written the history of YU Torah subsequently. What can you do? You can't do it all. Rothkopf did what he had to do. I pray that there'll be someone to take the leadership concept from him and go further. So YU was shaking in the 70s. So Riskin sent a student of his, a rabbinical student, to tutor the girl. This individual is one of the greatest menuvalim alive, Shem Rishon Yerkov. He raped the girl. The girl was all of 12, 13, it's statutory rape, and you know the way they work. Once they rape the girl, they tell her, if you say one word, I'm going to tell the world that you're responsible, you seduced me. And they rape and re-rape and re-rape. God have mercy. So this girl, who went through hell, and later throws away Yiddishkeit, and no one can have any complaint in the world to her, she cried to her sister, who was slightly above her, who happens to later becomes my student, studied with me, a frum girl, 100%. And this girl today, the one she cried to, is the head of the Orthodox Jewish Lesbians. No, was she born like that? Do I have to go further? Do you understand what I'm telling you? Can anyone blame the oldest sister for not looking at men? You understand? And she married another Orthodox lesbian. I don't know what her story is. About 20 years ago, it was the marriage of the week in the New York Times. Every Sunday, they have the marriage of the week. 2 Shomrat Shabbat lesbians getting married. God have mercy. And Dov, you were in the rabbinate? Were you in the rabbinate?
This
was
a couple of years.
Couple of years. Then you ran out to save your life. All right. Yitzchak was a Moor. I also, many say that. Yitzchak, the hardest question I ever got in my life. Aaron, should we go to the wedding? You understand? It's a replay of what just happened a week ago here in the state of Israel. Can you believe your ears? So please, my dear students, don't believe this talk that it's inborn and they can't help themselves. It's the end of the world if we give legitimacy, if we issue a way of life, a statement that this is normative. Do you understand the harm this does? Why you, a number of years ago, I was in England at the time, I had to put a mask over my face. The English people are frum, they're legitimate. And suddenly, why you has an event sponsored by, why you, with the mashgiach, introducing the problem with hundreds in attention, and a kid gets up, I am a great-grandson of Reb Yeruchim Lubavitch. No, I'll talk one day about Rabbi Yeruchim Lubavitch, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And I am a homo, and there's nothing, and I'm born. And the minute you give a platform, and you give assurance that this is normal, normative, you know how many other kids are going to come along? Why do I have to struggle to learn how to talk to a woman? I talk to a man, what's the difference? I don't want to be more vulgar. There's ways to say it, but I don't want to use that language. Ribbono shel Olam, how does anyone in their right mind who claims the mantle of rabbinic leadership state in an interview to the Makor Rishon, the Yukon, that he's contemplating doing partnership ceremony? Better they should live together with some ceremony and responsibility than without. My dear friends, we're bringing about the end of the world. We're not here to kill anyone or to yell or to shout. We treat that if a homo walks into shul, he's no different than a Mechalel Shabbos, but a Mechalel Shabbos is a Mechalel Shabbos and a homo is a homo, and we cannot condone either of them. Point number one. Point number two, and maybe even more important. And here I want to say something halacha l'maisa. Some of you are fathers sitting before me. Certainly the outsiders, to the best of my knowledge, almost everyone here is a parent. The insiders, meaning the students within the kollel, Avi, you just had opinion of Ben's. So don't tell me you're not a parent. So you have a little boy. I raised children. My wife raised the children, but I helped raise the grandchildren. Okay, some of my grandchildren were raised on these 10 hands. The fact that they're twice as tall as I am today doesn't take the fact that once they fit into these 10 fingers, right or wrong, you did. Baruch Hashem, my grandson admits to his grandfather is right. That itself is an achievement. So, you see, when you raise a kid, what does Chazal tell us? You have to talk Hebrew, you have to educate him. So, Minig Yisrael, one of the first psukim we teach children. Some people have this minig. Can anyone tell me it's going to be in Simchas Torah? You're going to read it. You're going to, very shortly, Torah Tzivalanu Moshe Murashaki Hilat. Right, Devarim Lamed Gimel Pasuk Dalid V'Zot Habracha Torah Tzivah Lanu Moshe. It's a very important pasuk. Morashah Kilat Yaakov. It's not just the Torah; it's our inheritance. It's our way of life. It's our raison d'etre. Without Torah, who are we? And I say to you, in this day and age, you got to teach a kid in the cradle Torah Tzivah Lanu Moshe Morashah Kilat Yaakov. How many times did I hear Rebbe talk about this, and I've quoted it 1,000 times over, and I quote it again, and all my grandchildren, when they want to mimic me and laugh at me, they'll imitate me telling them Ge'er v'toshav anochi v'machem. We Jews live in two worlds. On one hand, we're human beings, like every other human being, Adam v'Chava. They weren't Jewish yet. They're human beings. Noach. Human beings. But besides being a toshav, we're a ge'er. Lo dachi dachechem, lo machshavotai machshavoteichem. We are different. Shabbat, kashrut, tarat mishpacha, our whole approach to life. I'm going to talk tomorrow about Moscow Revisited. My wife and I, it's no secret, it was unpleasant to work for the Mossad and go to Russia, but we felt an obligation that we have to help the Jews there. I needed candidates. I was talking Friday night, so people like the Carrigans, if this were the 80s, I'd be on their case. You got to go to Russia. Now, the truth is, you couldn't go. You would flunk the security test. You understand? Because I had cases of wonderful people, and then it would come back, the son is a pilot. The joke is that if this were the 1980, and they're doing a security check on me, and I'm in the circumstances I am today, I couldn't go. Yitzchak, do you know why? My son-in-law, his father, high-ranking officer, IDF, weapons development, you follow me? I become a security risk. I had cases, people came back to me, I.A. Kroll stopped, and he shows me the security check. This is someone got smicha, worked with me, fabulous guy. Arrested, being brought up in charges of schita. How do you say? Extortion. Schita. All right, don't ask. Then I say to Aryeh Kroll, Nu mani agidlo, zot habaya shelcha. Tareli, show me the doch from the Shin Bet. And I looked at it, I figured out what to say already. I'll tell you all some other time. It'll take too much time to explain. But why did I give a hoot about the Jews in Russia? I never got a ticket in my life. I never had anything to do with police in my life. Yes, when I was in the Ravnit, I had a badge, a lieutenant on the Newark police. I had a balabas, was the photographer. He photographed all the dead bodies in Newark. So he got me a badge. He said, the rabbi, if you'll ever have a problem with the car or the police, you show them this badge. Oh boy, I had a badge. You understand? That was my lot. When, where? Go to Russia. KGB. Go through what you got. Point of entry. Being watched. Being followed. Who needs it? What can I tell you? The Jews in Russia needed it. That Avram Rachman is sitting here. That's my reward. You understand? That's a Jew. You're a ger. You're different. Different responsibilities. You have a dual existence. It's a different lifestyle. And that's so important to teach a youngster. Now, where does it come to play? Open up the Gemara in Sukkah. Daf Nun Aleph Omer Aleph. And the Gemara is describing Simchat Beit HaShoeva very shortly. Mishalorav, you didn't see what went on in Yerushalayim. And those of you that are here for the first year in Yerushalayim, every night you can wander to a different Simcha. You go into Meir Sharim, you'll be up all night. You can find where to dance, where to sing, where to get drunk. No end to the Simchat Beit HaShoeva in Yerushalayim. You can go more refined to the Great Synagogue, but it's no end. The Kotel, what's going on? Ah, but the Gemara says there was one problem. Gentlemen, thank God there are men and women in the world. If there wouldn't be men and women, Joseph, we would not be sitting here. Understand me, Benjamin? Thank God. There's an attraction. There's a pull. Ribbono Shel Olam, why marry? You got to be crazy. I'm quoting the Medrash now, Medrash Rabba. You got to be crazy to marry a strange woman. I have to support her. Have to have kids. What are kids? Money. They want this. They want that. Tuition in America is a state of Israel. I have to worry about a kid in the army. I have to worry all my grandsons, Kraviyim, front line. What? Who needs? Let me alone. Let me alone. Baruch Hashem. A woman. A man. Alkenya Zavisha the Vivi Mova the Vakbi Shtova Hayula Basa Echad. All right, there's a time and place for everything. Here they are at the Beis HaMikdash, at the Kotel, and men and women. Chazal were not happy with this. And they made, quoting the Gemara, Tikkun Gadol, a separation between men and women. And this is the Beis HaMikdash. This is the protocol, if I can use a Latin word, if you want to know how to pray at the Kotel. This is the heart of the protocol. Separation of men and women. And all these half-wit scholars who show pictures of 100 years ago, men and women praying at the Kotel, there was no mechitza between them. Absolutely right, there was no mechitza because the British protectorate wouldn't let us build a mechitza. Not only that, they wouldn't let us blow shofar. I still knew the individual, Harav Segel, who every year was arrested for blowing shofar at the Kotel at the conclusion of Yom Kippur. No, they didn't let you blow shofar. Alacha tamakaha, they didn't let you have a mechitza. They didn't let you show possession. But Ribbono Shel Olam with 67 Nisim v'Nifla'ot, immediately separation at the Kotel. This is the protocol. This is how you daven. More than that, and I never believed I would have to quote this, I can't believe my ears, students who yet knew the Rav, the way they speak, it's hard to believe they once were in the same room with Moriah Rebbe. It's a very famous volume, The Sanctity of the Synagogue, edited by Baruch Litwin, first edition, 1959. Yet knew Baruch Litwin Avram. Do you remember him? He came to Yeshiva. Rabbi Lam remembers him. Yitzchak, do you remember him? Rabbi Reuben remembers him. He was, remember, a short guy, a businessman. I think he was in the lumber trade, if I'm not mistaken. And he became a Krum Jew. And as all of America, the Toshav was taking over. Who needs a mechitza? Who needs separation? Women go to college, women go to university, women can get jobs like men, women can smoke in public, women have the right to vote. Who needs a machitza? So the Balabatim rule, they vote by majority vote. There's no Shabbos, there's no kashrut, there's no machitza, there's no tarat mishpacha. So they went to court. There were many court cases. This is Mount Clemens. There was in New Orleans a number of court cases. There was later in Utopia Parkway Jewish Center in Hillcrest. They went to court. We gave money, a public trust. Can you take the machitza down? And Geyish judges had a rule. The truth was, you could never win. It's a Pyrrhic victory. Even if you do win, the Balabatim say, the hell with you, pardon me, and they walk away and organize a conservative temple down the road. So he got expert testimony, and all the testimony was published in this volume. I could spend the next hour quoting from it. I only will quote one little piece. You can check it all out. Maybe it's online, the volume, beginning on page 109. And this is Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, message to a rabbinic convention. It's a message he sent to the RCA. The Rabbinical Council of America stands now at the crossroads and must decide to either assume boldly and courageously the time-honored, by ages sanctified role of the traditional rabbinate, which traces its history back to Joshua, Moses, and Sinai, and thus be ready to fight for an undiluted halacha, which is often not in the vogue, or to deteriorate into a so-called modern rabbinic group of undefined quality and of a confused ideology, vague in its attitudes and undecided as to its policies. In particular, I wish to call the attention of the conference to the Mechitza problem. I'm going further. I do hereby reiterate the statement I have made on numerous occasions, both in writing and orally, that a synagogue with a mixed seating arrangement forfeits its sanctity and its halachic status of Migdash Miat, a sanctuary in miniature, and it is unfit for prayer and avodah shebelev, the service of the heart. And then the Rav goes on, the famous story which is quoted and re-quoted, I actually knew the people involved, his own brother-in-law. There was a synagogue, and took down the Mechitza, moved Brookline, fancy neighborhood, the Rubster was in Dorchester, and his brother-in-law asked him, can he at least go to the temple to hear shofar? And the Rav paskind lahalacha to stay home, not shofar, because going to the synagogue to hear it, he would not be yotzei ben kovako. It forfeits its sanctity. This question today, hard to comprehend. RCA, OU, you have not heard a definitive statement, black, strong, decent, historic, traditional, consonants with the blood within our veins. I asked in America, why not? Politically correct. Don't want to cause dissension with the reform, the conservative. Absolutely shocked. I asked my own Talmidim, who are well placed and observant and committed. And I got the answer. Everyone's afraid. Politically correct. I said, what about the Rebbeim? You have Gedoli Yisrael, and why you? You've studied with some of them. Rav Heschel Shachter. Who's bigger than him in America today? Rav Michael Rosenzweig. Rav Morty Willig. These are not chin. These are giants of Torah. Psak. All right, Rabbi Rosenzweig. Anan Meredik Sheyurim. Rabbi Willick, I'm based in RCA. Rabbi Heschel Schechter. So I asked him, you're a band. I couldn't believe the answer. He said, yes, you're right, Rebbe. But the average rabbi out there in the field, the average balabasas, from as they are, they say, well, the Rosh Yeshiva are isolated. They're not out in the daily grind of the rabbinate. They don't really understand what is going on. And I have to tell you, that answer was frightening, and it wasn't just an answer. I spoke in Young Israel of Kew Garden Hills. Young Israel of Kew Garden Hills, what am I talking about now? I'm talking about a flumeri. I'm not talking about Young Israel of Wichita. I'm not talking about Young Israel of Kalamazoo, Michigan. I'm not talking about, I don't know where Young Israel out in Beverly Hills, in Century City, etc. Talking in the heart of Yiddishkeit, Kew Garden Hills. A full synagogue, standing room only. And the rabbi, an edel rav, Rabbi Yoel Scheinfeld, the son of Reb Fabian Scheinfeld. You don't get a greater rabbinic family than this. And when I'm finished speaking, I couldn't believe my ears. He says, I'm glad Rabbi Rakefet made this point. You can't be angry at me. He's, you know, like it's to say, if I would have made the point, the Balabatim would have eaten me up alive. Happy that Rabbi Rakefet made this point, and he tells me to try and to organize Rabbi Chaya to come out with a statement. This is axiomatic. Zil kribe rafu. This is breathing air. A shul without a machitza. At the Kotel HaMaraviyah, when you go into the Vatican, how do you dress? Marilyn Monroe goes into the Vatican. How did she dress when she went in? No. You go in, everyone, the Arabs, in the middle of the day, they spread their rugs, they take off their shoes, they bow down. I see in Brighton Beach, they close off streets, I don't know, five times a day. It's unbelievable. But you got to give them credit. They're praying, and praying properly with their understanding. And we Jews, and now let's talk about the Reforming Conservatives. Let me quote the Ruff to you. You don't argue, you don't maledict, you don't curse. You have to speak with dignity. All right. We once used to have tours here in the Kollel one day a year because we were getting money from the Jewish agency. So we had to go on a tour with Reform students, conservative students, Reform rabbis, conservative rabbis. Evidently, they abolished it a number of years ago. They realized that it's you can't force such an event. But I wish you would see the way I got along with the conservative, the Reform, the dignity. And they're overwhelmed. They meet a rabbi who has a little knowledge, you understand? I remember when we met the Belzer, and the Belzer, what the Belzer have done. And I told the Belzer Gabbai the name of the first Belzer Rebbe, the name of the first Belzer Rebbe's wife. It happens to be my wife's name. She's named after the first Rebbetzin. It comes down in the family. It's a Belzer family. Malka. So, and they were amazed. What knowledge. After the dignity. But we have to make our position clear. And a certain rabbi, I couldn't believe my ears, and it's here in print. It's not that I'm making it up. And they sent me a tape. I couldn't believe it. They sent me a tape to say about Reforming Conservative, they are our partners. To quote the Gemara in Reuven, Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim, you have to rip kriya. This is pure, total, complete, absolute apikursis. It destroys the branches of the tree on which we are sitting. How can you talk like that? How can you act like that? What are we talking about? Reform, conservative? We have to say to them, I would say to them, my dear colleagues, I want you to understand, there is no such thing as an Orthodox Jew. I resent anyone when they use the nomenclature Orthodox, I will not respond. There is a Jewish way of life. There is a Torah that God gave us. It obligates the man's commands respect from everyone who wants to be Jewish. Some do more, some unfortunately do less, but there's no such concept. Streams in Judaism, Judaism with kashrut, without kashrut, with karet, without, with mechitza, without mechitza. This is the Jewish way of life. This is the way we have survived. And my dear friends, look at the Poole report. I don't have to go further than the contemporary sociological system where every scientific study in the world shows where there is no observance, there is no Yiddishkeit, ultimately. What is the intermarriage rate today in the Western world where there's no Shabbat? What are we talking about? 80%, 90%. Where do we have Jews tomorrow? A silent Holocaust. Thank in Israel we have over 2 million Shomer Shabbos Jews, and every day the percentage grows higher. But with dignity, you can't yell, you can't shout, you can't curse, you can't maledict. But you have to talk common sense. This is the Kotel. You know how many Jews came to the Kotel? And because there is Kedusha Tamakom, and because there is a Mechitza, they looked up and asked, who am I? what am I doing here? And when a Jew starts to ask questions, that's the greatest blessing in the world, because ultimately he will find the answers. And Moriah Rebbe stressed time and again, the whole Seder, why did he have to build it to four questions? We're gearing up a Seder, the kids who will ask, the little kids, why the four questions? The Vilna Gaon was Makpid, you all know. After the little kids asked the four questions, the Gaon himself asked the questions. And in my house, which is really my grandson, his parents, my children, that's where our Seder is every year now. So after the little kids ask, we all ask together. And Moriah Rebbe said, it's the teacher Jew to question. This is the heart of Yiddishkeit. This is where it begins. Ibayilahu, Toshima. You question, you seek, you search. Uvikashvim Misham. And you will find God, you will find Torah, you will find Halacha, you will find observance, you will find meaning. You will understand what it means to be a ger in addition to a toshav. And I absolutely, completely differ with any so-called Orthodox rabbi who says about reforming conservative, Eilu v'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim. I'm the biggest believer in Divrei Elokim Chayim when it comes to Hashkafa. Halacha demands, commands obedience. Hashkafa, they're fabulous Hasidim out there. They're fabulous Litvakim out there. They're fabulous Mizrachistim out there. They're fabulous Agudistim out there. They're fabulous Torim Derecherets out there. Hashkafa, I'm a Talmud of the Rav. Never, ever did he try to force Hashkafa upon a Talmud. Habechirin it na. There's choice. There has to be choice. We don't look alike. The Gemara at the end of Brachot, we none of us look alike. That means psychologically, physically, mentally, emotionally, our talents, our abilities. Each one is different. Each one is a creation of God. But if this is true physically, it's true when it comes to outlook, hashkafa. Some Jews are the happiest people in the world to be chassidim. Some Jews are the happiest people in the world to be Litvakin. You understand? There's nothing wrong. Be where you are, where you're happy, where you're satisfied, where you're creative. But Shabbos, Kashrut, Tarat, Mishpacha, that obligates. Without that, we're not Jews. Without that, we have no tomorrow. Without that, we have no future. Now, I want to comment on something that came up in this discussion. Again, I don't want to mention names, but it's well known. A certain rabbi again said about homosexuality, Onis Rachmana Patre. Onis Rachmana Patre? I couldn't believe my eyes, my ears. Sure, I'm not an Amoritz. I know Onis Rachmana Patre. But what does it mean? And here I just want to quote, there was an open letter by a Talmud, his name, Rabbi Jeffrey Wolf. I believe he's married to a Talmud Davman, but okay. Does anyone know how old Rabbi Jeffrey Wolf is? I can judge by his age. So he wrote an open letter to Rabbi Riskin. As I noted, when halacha invokes coercion, it almost always refers to external coercion. Failure in the struggle against one's drives and impulses is not an exculpating factor, as excruciating as the struggle may be. To say otherwise is to deny freedom of will and to undermine the basic structure of the Torah's moral system, especially in the area of sexual conduct. And what he's saying is very simple. Onus Rachmana Patre, if you're going to apply that to freedom of choice, we have no Yiddishkeit left. I want you to know that this was said 120 years ago, 100 years ago. The Jews went to America, and who remained Shomer Shabbos in America? The finest families went to America. And you all know, they saw the Statue of Liberty, even if they didn't throw their tefillin into the water, even if they didn't throw their sheklach into the water. But when Harry Fishel met his cousins who came to greet him when he came to America, they said to Mr. Fishel, take off your yarmulke, you left it on the other side of the ocean. And that's documented in the biography written about Harry Fischel by his son-in-law, Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein. It's an absolute true story. And it repeats itself only Strachmana Patre. So the Rabbanim in Europe said, well, in America, they have to be Mechalabis, otherwise they won't survive. Ultimately, what happened from the Chil Shabbos was Judaism didn't survive. How many Jews are still alive who... it's not you. Anyone know what's going on? Whose phone? It's not. The music is good, but... anyone know whose phone that is? Herbie, is that yours? Okay. Good, Yerushalayim, the right music. You know how to turn,
I don't know how I got it.
You know how to turn it off? Give it to one of the insiders, one of the young men, they'll turn it off.
So you want to turn it off?
Okay, yeah, she kind of did. Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay, it's good music. Coming back here, Onis Rachmana Patre. Gentlemen, this gentleman represents history. You understand what I'm saying, Avram? He doesn't know how he's alive, what he went through, and he has grandchildren, frontline units of Tzva Hagana Yisrael. So when you look at Chaim Maltz, or Herbie as I know him, and I call him Herbie, it's a Ramban in Pashat Mishpatim, Pashat Chadashez Elechem Rosh Chadashim, not Mishpatim, Pashat Bo. You look up the Ramban, you'll understand why it's important that he should be Herbie and I should be Ani. There's a basic message there. But be it as it may, come back here. Onis Rachmana Patre, you have to overcome your own instincts. Oh, I'll tell you what Onis Rachmana Patre means. And I add this to Jeffrey Wolf. If Jeffrey Wolf is listening, I'm giving you something that you don't know. It's beyond the individual. What do I mean beyond the individual? Here's the story. I told this years ago. I tell it again. It happened. It has to be, I would estimate, 54, 55. A group of us, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was first getting started in Crown Heights. Before the mid-50s, no one ever heard of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. A little Rebbe, I claim it, Ebel in Crown Heights. Oh, by the mid-50s, everyone was talking about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So a group of us from YU decided to go to Yutet Kislev, to the Fabrengen, Hitva Adut, Yifrit Meduberet, Fabrengen in English. So, Yiddish English. So we went to the Fabrengen. So Chassid will say the Rebbe looked, thousands of people. He saw this group from YU. We knew you were YU guys. I have a feeling the Gabbai whispered in his ear, Rebbe, is Altvissen, is Dabba, from Yeshiva Bachrim, from Yeshiva University. There's a group here from Yeshiva University. And the Rebbe is giving this talk, and it was amazing, and I can swear he was looking right at us and talking to us, and he knew why you, Litvish, where we're coming from. And he says, I'm living it in Yiddish, but I'm trying to say it in English. And he says, thank God that the Maccabim were chassidim, not litvakim, nicht mitnatim. So right away the audience jumps forward, and he says, I'll give you an example. If they were Litvakin, they would come into the Beis HaMikdash, and he quotes the Gemara in Shabbos, they find one cruse of oil, and they make the cheshbon, it's going to take 7 days to get more oil. It takes, and the Ran explains, it took 3 days to go to Tzfat. Shabbos, you're not mechalo. There's no, this does not allow you to be mechalo Shabbos to get the kosher oil. 3 days to get back. So in other words, and the halacha is, as men unsent the menorah, when you light the menorah, it has to be tamid, it has to be continuous. So they would have made a cheshbon, how can we light the menorah with only one use of oil? We'll wait the 7 days to get the oil back. Einis Rachmana Patre, if you can't do it, not that the Yetzer Hara, nothing to do with you within, but without the circumstances, They're right, Onus Rachmana Patre. They would have never lit the Hanukkah menorah. There would have never been a miracle. There would have never been a Hanukkah. I thank God as the Maccabim Ham given Chassidish Yidden. Chassidish Yidden came, found one cruse of oil, and said, Mitzvah habol yotcha al tach mitzena. So that's where you say, Onus Rachmana Patre. But chas v'chalila to say onus rachmana patre and let it apply to every type of yetzahara, this is not onus rachmana patre. That's within you, freedom of choice. You have to overcome. B'chata b'chayim. Okay. All right. Now that I mentioned Chabad, let me continue with Chabad. Something very interesting happened in America, and I found out how far these lectures go. You know, it's one thing people bother, why you, where's Rakefet, how do we reach him? But when you see with tangible, it's unbelievable. So to make a very long story short, I had to go to Crown Heights to meet with a Talmud of mine there, and a personal matter, not for publication yet, maybe in 100 years we can publicize, and believe me, when it is publicized, you young people sitting here will be very proud to say, I knew Aaron Rakefet, but it's 100 years from now. So I had to go to Crown Heights, had to meet the student, and also once I was going to Crown Heights, I wanted to go in and say hello to the Rebbe's right-hand Gabbai cousin, the Reb Leib Lagrona. I have a special relationship there. Label's nephew was my closest friend for decades, until his death. Rabbi, Dr. Professor Tzvi Groner. Very special person, unfortunately died relatively young by modern standards. Maybe you've seen some of his scholarship. He was in Gaonic literature. We know each other from high school. He was BTA, I was MTA. He grew up very close to Alan Dershowitz. If that name means anything to you, if you read Alan Dershowitz's biography, he tells you in one of his books that his good friend Zvi Groner always wanted to practice pitching because he wanted to be a pitcher. He was a good ball player. And he made it cheshbon, the only way he could be shown mishum in the American League, in the major leagues, I should say, is by being a pitcher. Because a pitcher doesn't play every day, so you could be scheduled not to play on Shabbos. So I wanted to see Reb Leibel, Tzvi's uncle, who I know many, many generations. So I come to Chabad, and I'm on the street right in front of 770, and my Talmud is meeting me, and suddenly a few people are looking to find out. The word goes out. The Rebbe from Gris Kollel is here, and many, many Talmidim pour out of the building. They're all Talmidim of mine. Some of them I know from correspondence, some I'm meeting for the first time. All of them are telling me every joke I've told for the last 10 years. So I see these are really true students. So the next thing I know, and I got a fabulous tour of the inner workings of Chabad and the Rebbe's room. I said the Hillim and the room which they broadcast from, and the library and the Kitvei Yad, and wherever I'm going, they're taking pictures. Well, I never got so many calls in my life. The next day, on websites, picture after picture of Rabbi Rakefet at 770 updated. That's, I'm talking with Label Grown. I feel very bad because I sat down my back and he's standing there, and I felt bad. Malka says, how did you let him stand talking to you? But very fascinating, endless pictures, many websites. Then you have the bloggers, which I have to say is one of the most fascinating aspects of why the internet is 100% treif asa. It's beyond words. Every person blogs in whatever he thinks. Some people blog indecent, other people curse and maledict. And I couldn't believe all the concepts and people accused me of being a traitor to Lakewood and to YU and to Reb Aaron Cutler and to the Rav, and how do you go to Chabad? And other people logged in very beautifully. I asked a Talmud of mine to put in a comment for me that I thank all those that had such nice things to say. Ani modeh lahem mekerev halev. But let me say a few words about Chabad, and I want to bring it right into the YU world. YU today, we have wonderful memories of the Rav, and there are other people talk about the Rav, it just breaks the heart of anyone who really knew the Rav. I can tell you that in Teaneck, I was told, a certain rabbi told a woman reporter, quote, if Rabbi Soloveitchik were alive today, he would be in favor of women rabbis. I can tell you that anyone who says that, even if he learned with the Rav, this person learned with the Rav in the 70s, he robbed oxygen from the Rav, but he really didn't understand the Rav. There's a big difference between being in favor of women opening a text, women who get PhDs and MDs and conquer the world in every profession. Ad kedei kach that our dear Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman, should live and be well, my Talmud, the new president of the yeshiva, one of his first appointments, if not the first, was to put a woman vice president in charge of endowment and fundraising. I know the family, I yet knew her mother, I taught her brothers, Mrs. Herman. Of course, women. But to go and make the jump, that Rabbi Soloveitchik would be in favor of women rabbis, a total misunderstanding of the Rav, and look at his own family. Look at Dr. Atara Tversky, look at Dr. Tova Lichtenstein, look at the daughters he raised. Do you know that Atara, when it came time to establish the Soloveitchik Institute in Boston, which no longer exists, but it functioned for a number of years, do you know that she put a condition in that anyone who'd be selected, it has to be a rabbi whose synagogue did not have a woman's prayer group? This was a condition put in by Dr. Atara Soloveitchik Tversky, should live and be well, that anyone who would get that position, it was afterwards Rabbi J.J. Schachter, that he could not have had a woman's prayer group in his synagogue. So to say this about the Rav, so you have to understand, if rabbis can say, Onis Rachmana Patre, if rabbis can say, Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokayim, rabbis can say the Rav would have been in favor of women rabbis, etc., etc., they are toshavim. They have forgotten their status as gerim. But that's the way I view it. The same thing with Chabad. All these cynics about Chabad and critics about Chabad, I tell the Chabadnikim, just as certain statements diminish the Rav's memory and hurt the Talmidim who were true to his message and his teachings, Chabad, you have those that go further, conquer the world, available all over for Jews, help beyond words. My grandson had to go to Germany. He won a prize, an international prize. This young man actually videoed my other grandson for what was shown at the award ceremony, what he won the prize for, design, etc. And he came in number one in the world, the German Kerns, the city, the heart of their design, development. He won a second prize while there. The audience selected him as the top presenter of all the people being honored. So before he went, he contacted the Chabadnik there. When he got to the city, Shabbat, Kashrut, Tfilah, nothing was a problem. More than that, this I tell you between the lines, my grandson had to go to Germany to learn who his grandfather is. Of course, this Chabadnik, and they became friendly, started asking him, who are you, where are you, how do you come, how do you know English, etc., where were you born, Yerushalayim, grandparents who made Aliyah, who's your grandpa? Rav Kefet, I listened to his shiurim. The guy, the Chabadnik there started dancing around my grandson. So you see, what are you going to... Malad the Chabad? Chabad has the same problem. There are many Chabadnikim, it's the absolute majority, a loyal to the Rebbe, loyal to the Rebbe's memory. They walk with their feet on the ground. They think logically. You do have an element, unfortunately, which, in my opinion, degrades the Rebbe's memory. The Chabadnikim who believe messianicism, and I've spoken to some of them, it is unbelievable. But you have to be balanced. You have to understand there is a lot more good in Chabad than the difficulties that are engendered by the messianists. And that's my answer to anyone who criticizes. How do you go to Chabad? No, you can criticize. How do you go to YU? How are you a Talmud of the Rav? If this Talmud said this and this Talmud said that, the majority of the Talmidim of the Rav walk with their feet on the ground and their head in heaven. But you have a minority. This is life, freedom of choice. I protest, I yell, I scream. But this is the reality, and you can't lose sight of the trees because of other trees in the forest. And it was very funny, this concept. There's someone I daven with who I'm very much in debt to. He drove the Rav to my wedding. His name, I daven Shabbos morning for 49 years in the same shul. So to my right sits Monty Nussbaum. Monty Nussbaum greeted me when I came to Solanta, a kid, public school, coming to Solanta. He was in second grade, I was coming in first grade. He was in third grade, I was coming in second grade. And he opened the door and welcomed me to Solanta and taught me the and outs. The lambs, you know Monty Nussbaum. So later in life, I'm getting married, Baruch Hashem, and Rebbe is going to be Masada Kedushin, but he's in a rush that night. As I mentioned before, he has to go from the west side of Manhattan to Long Beach, where he's going to speak at the Mizrahi Convention. So now he needs someone to drive him to my wedding. Who had a car in those days? Every kid in YU was a schnorrer. Who had money? Who ever heard of a Torah Jew having money? There were one or two, but it was few and far between. So one kid, he had a jalopy. His grandfather gave him a jalopy, whatever. He had a good grandfather. His name, Rabbi Danny Rosenthal, he's a little bit younger. Danny drove the Rav to my wedding. So I'm always thankful to Danny. He came in Aliyah a number of years ago, maybe 10 years ago already. He sits a few rows in front of me, an old Rivka. So Danny, in his rabbi, he was in the chinuch, he was a principal. He evidently was in a community where he had a run-in with Chabad. And there are problems. There's certain Chabadnikim who have the attitude, we must go the Chabad way. At times, it's better for the community, join forces. So he always had it in for Chabad. So the other day, and you can't argue with him, that was his life experience. The other day, generally his grandsons are here studying in yeshiva. The other day, a kid shows up. I say, I never saw this kid before. So I say, Danny, who's this young man? He says, oh, it's a distant cousin. I never met him before. And I start, kid is from Brazil. I see he's all excited. I look at the kid. I understood already. I said, who picked you up for Yiddishkeit? He says, Chabad. I said to Danny, Danny, you heard what your cousin just told you? I don't want to hear another negative word from you about Chabad. And that, in my humble opinion, has to be our attitude. I don't deny the messianics. Believe me, when you go into the main base medrash in 770, there's a tremendous sign up. Yechi Adonainu Moreinu V'Rabbeinu Melech HaMashiach L'Olam V'Ed. It is crazy. But they had bitter fights there. They can't get that sign down. You go to the cornerstone, so they put up the cornerstone of this building. What they were repairing there, what they did when they combined buildings, was laid by the Rebbe. This was the original cornerstone. It went to court. And they said about the Rebbe, Zeichet Tzadik V'Kadosh L'Bracha L'Chayelam Habaz L'Chuto Yagen Aleinu, the Messianics ripped it out. What do you mean? Laid by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Shlita. This and this day. They were caught. It was in the New York Times. You know what it reads today, the cornerstone? Laid by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, period. Don't tell you if he's dead or alive. All right, it's terrible, it's criminal. Tzvat, there's a very strong element that it reflects New York. Kfar Chabad already is much more normative, Yerushalayim more normative, and even in 770, it's only in the Beis Medrash where you run into this. Everything else, the Shluchim and all that goes around it, is totally normative. But in my humble opinion, that has to be our attitude. Okay. Women rabbis. I don't want to elaborate, I've spoken about it many times. Look, the Rav permitted women to study Gemara, encouraged them to study Gemara. I spoke with the Rav about this in depth. It's not the Rav. You go back to the Chafetz Chaim, you'll find exactly the same thing. You go back to Rashi, we have the commentary of Rashi. Without Rashi, we couldn't learn Shas. And it's Rashi's daughters who edited and transcribed it. They were Gedolei Yisrael. You take the Evan Ezra, the Bisus Zalman Meltzer. It was his wife who copied it over and prepared it for publication and proofread. These were very brilliant, erudite women. The whole concept of I can't do it now. I did it years ago in great depth. The whole concept of why Rebbe Eliezer said, the Gemara in Saita concept is very correct. When a girl gets married at 12 and she learns nothing, if you're going to start teaching her the Pasha of Sota, she'll learn Tiflet, she'll learn that Schut Tola, look at the Mishnah, you'll understand, she'll learn how to do tricks. She'll learn how to give bread to poor people while living a licentious life. Absolutely, when you have limited time to teach, we all got married then at women at 12, 13, men at 15, 16. It was a different world. Nowadays, women get married later. We have real problems because of education. Some women put education before anything. They become very selective. I need not go into detail now, but you all understand the contemporary problems. Look at Katamon, it's called the Bitsa. How do you translate that into English? It's the swamps. Look at Katamon and you'll understand what I'm talking about. Look at the Upper West Side. Look at Washington Heights. I was there for a Shabbos. I saw it goes on. So, of course, if women don't have knowledge, they will matter. But our biggest problem is you cannot turn a woman into a man. We don't want to turn a woman into a man. It's the biggest mistake. The leftist liberals here, there's a battle going on, which the future of the state of Israel is at stake. Because women do not have the physical strength of men. And when we go into battle, a young man is sitting here who was in battle. There's a young man, there's a middle-aged man sitting here whose son was in battle in Gaza. And you know that there are no chairs and sofas for soldiers to rest on when they go into Gaza. They've now combined men, women, many groups together in the Israeli army. Many of the generals are yelling and shouting. The retirees who can speak out openly, you can't speak out openly when you're in uniform, but the retirees, that the army has made compromises, the men have to climb 20 feet into the air over a fence, the women only 10. You can't have an army like that ready to fight. We can't turn women into men and men into women. Women have a role in the army, absolutely. The Gemara already says, the Gemara in Saita, that a Melchemet Mitzvah, even a Chatan V'Kala, have to fight. No, all the Rishonim deal with the problem. What are women going to do? They are the supply. They're involved. Intelligence, computers. There's no end running office. There's no end to what women can do. But we don't have to have women. And then you're going to put a man and a woman in a tank. Ribbono shel Olam. I don't want to be in a world. I don't want to live in a world where a man and woman are in a tank together and you don't understand the problem. It's an open Gemara in Yuma, an open Gemara in Sanhedrin. Ribbono shel Olam. If you take away the sexual urge, chickens don't lay eggs. A young man and a young woman in a tank together. Oh my gosh. Okay, women rabbis, but you see, here in Israel, the problem basically has ameliorated itself. And what's interesting is that the leadership, the lead, the example, has come from the Haredi world. And here, what is a rabbi? Nowadays, everyone knows a rabbi's task, responsibility, is the way he speaks. You can be the brightest guy in the world, but when you stand for a rabbinate, they want to hear a drusha, want to hear you speak. Fine. Moshe Rabbeinu could not be a rabbi today. He studied. But our rabbanim speaking, speaking. I had a great teacher when it comes to speaking. I'm not ashamed to say, I had a great teacher who taught me how to speak. His name was very simple, Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. If you heard the Ravs, particularly in Yiddish, you can't hear anyone else speak. No one comes anyone near. It's like comparing a little cruse of oil to a tremendous tank filled with enough oil for the city of Jerusalem. So you take Israel today, the leading speakers are women. Women. Yeah, I give you three names, I can give you many. Yamima Mizrahi. It's a classmate of my daughter's in Chorev. Yamima Mizrahi is a world famous figure today. And she speaks Chumash and Parsha, common sense. Women talk. She introduced two new words into the Hebrew language, shopping and style. She's talking to women. She understands women. Magnificent. Noah Yaron Dayan, the Breslava. I've told you the story how she discovered Yiddishkeit. My wife read her first book as a result of this story. You know the story? I told it here in class. I don't remember. I told it in many places. Noah Yaron Dayan. She was a TV radio personality. She was on Galei Tzahal in the army, and then she was on TV. And she's living, pardon me for the word, that's why her book, they can't use it in Beis Yaakov, because they can't handle it. And she was living with a guy writing, a guy named Dayan, writing a TV script, money, no problem. And they were living in Israel when they were blowing up the buses. God have mercy, what we went through about 15, 20 years ago. I can give you a list of people I knew who were blown up, killed on buses. Our very family. His mother became my daughter became the apitropis for two orphans whose mother, father was divorced already, mother blown up in the number 19 bus. So, they wanted to get away, and it's tension here. So they went to the travel agent and said, look, we have a long weekend. We don't have to work, no TV, no radio. We want to go, let's see, Holland. Let's go to Holland. It's 3 hours, 3.5 hours. Get us a nice hotel, get us a seat in the plane, business class. So they go to Amsterdam. They get there Thursday night, and Friday, Thursday afternoon. And they see in Amsterdam, they're Jews. So they say to each other, let's get the heck out of here, let's go. And they look at the map and they see Amsterdam. Holland's not a big country, but the most northern part, let's go there. They get on a train, they go as far as they can go, they get off the train and they go to the station master. And they say, where's there a hotel nearby? And he laughs at them. He says, no one comes here during the winter. It was Hanukkah time, December, Kislev. No one comes here during the winter. So, but you have a problem. There's no train going back to Amsterdam until the morning. You were on the last train tomorrow morning. You know what? I'll go down the block. He says, you take charge of the train station, and I'll go a block away. There's a little hotel. I know the man. So the train master comes back 10 minutes later, says, give it a half hour. He's setting up a room for you upstairs. So they're waiting, and then they go walk over, and they come in, and of course, they're speaking English. You're in Amsterdam. You're Israeli. He's Dutch. So you speak English to him. So he says, wait a minute. I want to go upstairs, check that everything is clean, ready for you. Had someone clean it up, set it up. He goes upstairs, and now he's walking down the stairs. Now they're talking to each other. What language are they talking to each other?
Hebrew.
They're Israelis. They're born here. Ivrit. The man hears the Hebrew, and his name was Jacob. And he says to them, "Are you speaking Hebrew?" And they say, "Yes." Says, "You're Jewish?" They say, "Yes, we're Israelis." He says, "Come into my office." And in the office, the Hanukkah candles are burning. And she writes, at that minute she realized she can't run away from God. The rest is history. What's beautiful about the story is that they both became breslover together. And they tell me, a very big Talmud Chacham. He gives Shayurim. People say they love his Shayurim. And then you have the main star every, what is it, Wednesday night in Heichal Shlomo, Zivan Rahav Meir. I mean, you can't get better than that. I've heard her on tape. My wife is driving me insane. We have to go on Wednesday night. I don't know, you get old. I have so much to read, so much to do. So much to learn, yet so much to write, and you have no idea. I'm finished the latest guy, and I don't know how to translate that. But all right, she's Nechama Leibowitz. She's fabulous, fabulous. She already, it's mixed audiences, but you know what's beautiful about all these names I mentioned? There's more. It begins with Rav Kanievsky, with his, don't ask, with his wife, Batsheva, who was Rav Elyashiv's daughter, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha. Even Artscroll came out with books about her where they have pictures of women, actually. And you know what's beautiful? They're women. They remain women. They didn't become men. They don't have to be rabbis. They don't have to do conversion. They don't have to be Adam Lekiyam Dava. They do public challah, lahafrish challah. If you read the weekend papers, Yair Lapid got into a lot of trouble because his wife went to hafreshet challah. 1,000 women bake together and make a bracha. And it's a beautiful thought, what bread is about, what baking is about, what sustenance is about, what women are about. You understand? This is beautiful. And this has to be our approach. We, women, the world is open to them. Don't lose your femininity. If you do, you've lost the battle. And this requires a balance. Unfortunately, you don't win it all. You understand the Jaffa and these feminists and their stridency. But there's a happy medium with self-expression and Torah Hashem Tanuma. And then I, Herb, I don't have time for comments. I have a world to do yet. Lapid's wife, I know. He comes, he's a great grandson of Rav Amiel. She's a great granddaughter of Rav Amiel. You got to know who she comes from. And he's criticized. You don't know what went on. I can't quote the West, the papers quoted him, what he answered about Brit Mila. What an idiot. What an idiot. His mother told him off that your wife went La Frisch Hala. And he answered his mother, he said, hard for me to repeat it. It was in the weekend papers. He answered his mother, and what you did to me when I was 8 days old and did a Brit Mila in public, and that is all right, but the Hafreshet Challah is not. God have mercy. And there's another point here, which is very important. Vic, all these people, these rabbis, these are famous rabbis. No one heard of Rakevitz's name, believe me. Everyone heard of his name. These are world-famous rabbis. Talmidim of the Rav. What's our relationship to the so-called Haredi world? Are we part of it? Or are we a different branch, cutting ourselves off? And here I have to tell you, whenever you speak of innovation and change, and you're going to build the shul, the elu, the elu, and to be in favor of mixed seating at the kotel, men, women, mixed, it's against all of Yiddishkeit. But tell me, What's our relationship with Chabad, with Ger, with Panovich, with Merkaz Harav, with Har Mor, with Lakewood, with Mir? Are we part of the same world? Or we're walking away? Yitzchak, you are so wrong, you have no idea. Agudat Yisrael in America, the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, issued a statement. While we may have differed with Yeshiva University over the decades, we always knew they were part of us and we're part of them. Our blood and flesh was exactly the same. But Chova VeTorah, that's a problem. And that's quote unquote. Shas, if you don't know what's going on right now, they call Gveta a YU guy. So that right now she's being accused of being in the Tzioni Dati camp. But I want to tell you, my own feeling is that Chas v'Chalila, we should move away from the Haredi world, halacha l'maasa. Right now, we can have all the difference of opinion in the world regarding every hashkafic issue imaginable. Secular education, men and women, how they meet, how we interact, pictures of women, Tzva Hagana Yisrael, Israel, Yom Ha'atzmaut. We can have all the differences in the world. But our Shabbat, Kashrut, Parat Mishpacha, our makam tefillah is one and the same. And that's what's so beautiful about Israel. You can go into any shtibl and you'll see davening there, even in Mea Shearim, you'll see shtreimels, black hats, regular black kippot, kippot srugot. You'll see every type of dress in the world, and everyone is counted for minyan. And this, to me, is critically important. Let me go a step further. Certain individual, I don't know where he's from, Shmuley Yankelevich. Is he a YU musmach? So, Shmuley Yankelevich, evidently part of this new generation. One second. I just want to find the quote. I don't want to deal with the whole article because it's endless. But there's one quote here. What is kosher and over at the cloud? Oh, here it is. Okay. And Shmuley Yankelevich, does anyone know him? Do you recognize the name? He's gotten tremendous publicity. So he has here an article that appeared in the Jewish Week, 25 Phenomena of Renewed Modern Orthodoxy. And he's, over the years, many people have approached me to ask what distinguishes progressive, open, liberal, modern orthodoxy from the rest of orthodoxy, centrist orthodoxy, ultra-orthodoxy. I'm happy to see he put centrist orthodoxy, meaning while you in the same camp, with ultra-orthodoxy. And he lists out 25 challenges today for the rabbi. Evidently, this is a Chovah VeTorah position. And I just want to deal with one of them. Number 13. Welcoming progress, spiritual orientation towards progress over a decline of generations, Yerida Dorot, ensures that Judaism remain dynamic spiritually, communally, and eternally. And I just want to mention, I don't know what he's talking about, a decline of generations. Shmuley Yankelevich has to be a lot younger than I am. I would place him in his late 30s, 40s, from what I read about him, what I hear from him. Decline of generations. Does anyone know what it was like when we were growing up 60, 70 years ago? Do you know in the Bronx there were over 1 million Jews? Tell me, Rabbi Lamb, where did you see a frum Jew in your neighborhood? Did you see one? Did you see one? I knew one frum Jew in his 40s, Mr. Kupinski. Mr. Kupinski, Elia Kupinski, Baruch got two brothers. As far as I know, there were only two Jews in the whole Bronx under the age of 70 retirement.
Well, that's under 70.
Over 70, yeah, you saw. But in the prime of life, we saw no one. And Lo Aleinu, Mr. Kapinski's grandson, was killed in the massacre in Har Nof, in the shul. He was one of the five Karbonot. I believe his name was Tzvi Kapinski, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not certain about the first name. Or maybe it's Aryeh. I'm trying to think. There was a brother who worked here. I think he was Dov. I think the one who was killed, Lo Aleinu, was Aryeh Kapinski, Shlomo Kapinski's son. What are you talking about? Spiritual life? Who ever heard of a Shema Shabbos? Who heard of the New York Times quoting from Jews? Who ever heard of the New York Times running op-ed page articles on why Brit Mila is so important? Who ever heard of the New York Times talking about an Erev and explaining what an Erev and getting an Orthodox Jew, a Torah Jew, to deal with Erev? We have made such progress. What are you talking about? 25, 50, 70, 80 years ago? Today, Yiddishkeit is on every street corner in the world, as we will see tomorrow. And let me go one step further, very quickly, and deal with some of the contemporary problems in Israel. The Israeli scene is shaking now. The Supreme Court, you're all aware of what's happening. Supreme Court, they must be very bright people to be on the Supreme Court, but at times very bright people can be very foolish. We have an expression, it's called an Iber Chacham. I don't know where it comes from. I think it's a German expression originally. But you know, you can be very bright and very foolish. The Supreme Court just gave the Haredi world the biggest gift they ever got. All of you know that Wednesday, Supreme Court ruled that the draft exemption is ending and they have 1 year to straighten it out. And all the Haredi youth will be in the army. Well, if anyone thinks this is going to happen, I'll sell you the Brooklyn Bridge and ask you for change. But you see, al pi halacha, there is no tour in the world for anyone, any Jew living in Teaneck or living in Kew Gardens Hills or living in Lawrence, not to report to the IDF at the age of 18. It's a milchemet mitzvah. You see what's going on in the world. Were you in London over Shabbos? Were you in Paris this morning? You see what's going on in the world? In London they had a miracle that the entire bomb didn't explode. What was the 22 people injured, but no one serious, thank God. If the bomb had exploded in its entirety, they say it would have blown up part of the subway system altogether. God have mercy what we're up against. Know what it meant here, blowing up buses? It's no exemption. It's a milchemet mitzvah. But the Supreme Court in America had to deal with the Afro-American issue time after time. If you follow their rulings, post-World War II, 50s, 60s, you notice the rulings contradicted each other, but they all had to take in what they call a social reality. In other words, law does not exist in a vacuum. There's a social reality. We have faced that. It's not something alien to Torah. I don't have to go far. But all of you know that in Lithuania, where I grew up 120 years ago, some women covered their hair and some women didn't cover their hair. And if you don't believe me, Rabbi Belkin said it word by word in a talk he gave in yeshiva in the early 50s. It's a reality. So the Rabbanim had a problem. What do you do? They yell, shout, and maledict the women who don't cover their hair, married women? Or you try to be melamed zchut and simultaneously try to inspire? And this is an open issue. If you're familiar with the Sefer Mitzvot of Rav Horowitz of New Haven, the Rav held him to be a Gadol Hadar, So you'll see in the middle of a Sefer Mitzvah, that's about page 150 and 51, if I recall, it's a tremendous long footnote that goes on and on dealing with the problem of the women in Lithuania. But that's a social reality. And you find it in Chazal, Tov Shishkogin, Valume Zidin. It's the difference whether it's written explicitly, whether it's something derived by Chazal. You all are familiar with these sugyot. So you see, the Supreme Court here, what they've done, if their elections tomorrow, the right-wing parties, religiously, Haredim as they're called, will get 2 to 3 more seats as a result of the Supreme Court decision. The sad part is that these Jews were coming out of the ghetto and they were starting to go into the army. If you go into Machon Lev, they're on to 2,000 Haredi students in Machon Lev. Every academic institution in Israel today is trying to open Haredi divisions. The reason is HaKesev Ya'anet HaKol. The government is anxious. The Haredim have to contribute to the economy. The Haredim ultimately will take over the army. The Haredim will take over the government. The Haredim will take over the army. There's statistics. There's population. There are no secrets here. We live in a world of normalcy. Everything works in a rational fashion, thank God. And we want them to be able, capable, and no one wants to be poor. And when one Haredi sees another Haredi, goes to Machon Lev, serves in the army, makes a good living, and remains a Haredi Jew, underline the last few words, which is what's happening today, they want to be part of it. And let it roll. The one justice, the one judge, Alazayin Gazun Salzburg, who's a yeshiva boy, he's an Alonshva Talmud, he's a Talmud of Rabbi Yehuda Mital, and Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, read his dissenting opinion, I sign on, beautiful. He said, of course everyone has to serve in the army, of course it's a Melchemet Mitzvah, but there's a reality, and it's happening, but it has to work slowly, it can't be coerced, it can't be forced. So everyone has asked me about this latest. That's my humble opinion. Where I have a tremendous problem is there's a tremendous attack today on the prenuptial agreement in Israel. This entire little volume was published, given out free. I did the volume, I went through the volume. It's Baruch Hashem, I'm not an ignoramus in some of the area. I gave many shurim in the Kollel. They quote from the 1930s, what it has to do with the prenup, it's a totally different situation. Go back to my shiur 40 years ago, you'll understand. But was this terrible attack? Now I want to tell you something. I absolutely don't agree with this attack on the prenup. The prenup, as I view it, is an extension of the ketubah. It is nothing beyond the ketuvah which we have in front of our eyes. In the ketuvah, you have the money penalties. We want to be sure the man will honor, support his wife in dignity, do what has to be done, will not cause his wife any harm. This is the prenup. It's an extension. You say it's coercion? All I know is, look at the Rambam, Hilchot Gerushin, Perek Bet, Halacha Chaf. And I repeat, Hilchot Gerushin, Bet, Halacha Chaf. Misha din noten shekofun otola gareshet ishtova, lo ratzala garesh. This is very important. If a Beit Din concludes that a man is obligated to divorce his wife and he refuses, Beit Din shel Yisrael, b'chol makom, b'chol zman, makin oto ad sheyoma roksa ani, v'yichtov haget, v'hu get kosh kasher. Halacha psuka, makno tasha omer rotsani. It's a Gemara, and the Rambam elaborates. And what do you mean? you can beat the hell out of him. You need ratzon. When you give a get, you need ratzon. It can't be. But you see, the halacha is that if it's Jews that are coercing him, perfectly permissible. Aye, the Rambam asks a very question. Where is there the ratzon? Why is this get good? And here the Rambam becomes a magnificent psychologist. Avomishet hakfoyatzro hara levatel mitzvah ola sota veira vuhuka atcha asa dava shechayev laasot o atcha nitrachet mi dava shechasa laasot ein ze anus mimenu aval hu anas atzmo b'dayto hara'ah. Do you see what the Rambam is saying psychologically? Every Jew wants to be a good Jew. You force yourself to be evil. You force yourself to be bad. When you beat him up, what you're doing is you're getting, if I use Hasidic terminology, the klipot of Rishut, and you're allowing him to become a good Jew again. L'fikach zeshen ratzal l'garesh may acher shehu rotzel liyot mi Yisrael rotzehu lasot kol ha-mitzvot v'lahitrachet min ha-veidot v'yitzron hu shetakfo v'kiven shehu ga ad shetashash yitzro v'yama rotzeh ani kvar geresh l'ritzono. What a magnificent Rambam. And I don't understand this opposition. We have a terrible problem today. We have Jewish men who all they're interested in, they are toshavim, all they're interested in is money. And here you have women in Israel. Yes, the man will give a get if the woman gives him the apartment. You understand? In America, you have terrible problems. The man will give a get if the woman will give him custody of the children, if the woman will give him $100,000, $200,000. Terrible. A Beit in Shel Yisrael can coerce. Why are we opposed? You're missing a conclusion, gentlemen. You have another minute. I'm concluding right now. You're missing a conclusion. A conclusion you won't forget. Particular Herbie.
Why?
Listen carefully. Gentlemen, there's a lot more to comment on, but I've done the heart of it, and with this, I think you can walk away and, in my humble opinion, remain a fabulous Torah Jew, both a ger and a toshav. These are some of the problems. Some are universal, some are more Israelitized, but we have to have a Torah approach. We have to have sources. But let me conclude now with this Rambam. What did the Rambam say? A Jew wants to do good, a Jew wants to be good. What's the Rambam talking about? We have Jews, Mechalalei Shabbos, Ochlein Levedet and Treifat, maledicting Rabbanim. Without Rabbanim, we wouldn't be here today. I hold it's a Gemara neither. Daf Lamed Amin Aleph. Well, I should say Daf Lamed Amud Bet. Gemara Nida. The famous Gemara, what is the embryo doing? The embryo is in the mother's womb. And Melamdin Oto Kola Torah Kula. The angel is very busy teaching the little embryo. Kola Torah Kula. I was Sandek at two Britat. These are two kids that 8 days earlier knew Kol HaTorah Kula all of Shasim Paiskim. When you're ready to leave, kibin shabol avir olam, when the embryo is ready to go out, bo malach v'sitro al piv, u'mishachko kol ha-torah kula. Malach comes, hits him on the lip, above the lip, the cleft, and he forgets the entire Torah. So the question is very simple. Why waste the malach's time? If he's going to knock it out of you, why does he have to waste 9 months teaching you? And if you know the whole Torah, why does he knock it out of you and tell you to forget it? What's on here? And of course, I heard from Mori Rebrav Soloveitchik, and every Darshan in the world says it. There's a magnificent message here. It's the Rambam we just read, that what it means is every Jew is a vessel. You can accept the Torah. It's nothing new to you. It's nothing different. You learned it as an embryo during the 9 months in your mother's womb. You were prepared. You can be a ger. You don't have to only be a toshav. You're a Jew. It's within you. It's part of your blood. It's part of your very being, part of your very essence, part of your very blood and flesh, sinews and bones. And I end off with a beautiful story. Came on one of the Chabad websites. Chabadnik was on a plane, and whole group waiting to go on board. A group of Israeli kids coming back, having toured America with their leader. And the Chabadnik sees these Israeli kids. And of course, the first thing he thinks of, let me put tefillin on them. Then he approaches them, and the kids laugh. We're not from Anachnu Chiloniyim. What's their tefillin? Haredim, don't serve in the army. They give him a mouth. But if our leader will put on tefillin, we'll put on. Goes to the leader. Well, like Lapid's mother, laughs it away. And a lady is sitting there, an elderly lady, and she goes over to the Chabadnik and she says, you know what? I'll have them all putting on tefillin. Give me a few minutes to speak to them. And this Chabadnik looks at this lady, like, what's she going to say? And she says to them, I saw what was going on. I heard your attitude. I'm a survivor. I went through the hell of the Holocaust. I want to show you a picture. And she shows them the famous picture of the Jew putting on tefillin before they're going to execute him and the Nazis laughing at him. And she says, tell me, who do you identify with in that picture? And every last one said with the Jews, the Jew putting on the tefillin, and they all lined up to put on tefillin and to say Shema. So please, we've come a long way. We have a way to go yet, but we're getting there. And tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, you're going to get a message that you can't forget before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And to the young men here, what you can accomplish with your lives, you'll see tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem. I still shiver and shake when I think of Moscow, revisited. My dear students, until we meet again tomorrow morning, I just want to state, Michael, tell them to listen to what I'm about to say. There's no class next Monday. I know that the Kolle will have class. It's Sunday. It's a fast day, and just at my age, I have to be careful. I don't want to teach on a fast day. You understand why? So there'll be regular class Monday. That'll be our last class until after Sukkot. But Monday there's no class. And Yom Yerushalayim, there'll be no class. I've learned from the past. No class Sunday. Monday there's class. Until we meet again in Chel, I want to thank everyone for coming. Now just let me think. Morty, do you have your car here? No. You don't need a lift? Yeah, 1 second. Do you have room for two in your car? You have a car. So take the lambs home. It's okay. It's right now.
I'm going to the
chair. Okay, so. And one second. So you take them.
I'm going to town. It's fine.
You're going to town. You're right on the way. So 1 second. So, and you take more. Are you here for another shiva? Yeah. That's it. Can we meet again? Thank you very, very much. And to your health and happiness. Das v'danya.